What's up, Crypt Nation? How are you guys doing today? Today's episode is going to be super exciting, I can promise you that. And it is also brought to you guys by our sponsors, eToro. And if you guys don't know what eToro is, it is the place where you can go to buy and sell and trade cryptocurrency with confidence. And these guys are super smart. They've been in the business since 2013. They've offered crypto assets since 2013, but they've actually been around longer than that, since 2007. They've got 10 million users across 140 countries, and they basically just have a lot of regulated on-ramps and off-ramps between dollars and most currencies. They've built an awesome suite of technical trading tools for the advanced guys and gals out there. Everything is really low latency and highly secure. It's everything that you expect. And they have some other really, really smart tools, like if you want to play with a virtual simulator for money, you could give it $100,000 of virtual money that you could trade with and learn. And yeah, guys, these cats are the real deal. It's important to note that not all platforms are created equal, and I encourage you to go try it out for yourself. So, you know, just go to crypto101podcast.com/eToro. You can check it out and send us a DM if you guys like it. If you don't like it, just let us know. And we are excited to have these guys on our team. And without further ado, let's get into the episode. You know, this is the weekly fire. First off, Pizza Mind, I didn't even say what's up to you, man. How you been?
Oh, man. The grease is bubbling. It's so hot right now.
Where are you in the world right now?
I am in Dallas, Texas. It is hot. It is muggy, but it is absolutely beautiful over here.
Holy crap. Dude, I love that you are enjoying your time in Dallas. I've actually never been. I've been to Austin before, and that's about it. Is it different than Austin?
I've never been to Austin, but it's very strange over here. I've gotten lost driving around like 10 times because each road has like four or five different numbers assigned to it.
Oh my God, that sounds miserable.
Yeah, yeah. Whoever built Dallas was completely drunk.
Well, Crypt Nation, Bryce and Pizza Mind here for the Weekly Fire, where we recap the important events of the week. And we basically just, you know, get into some heated debates. We answer crypto's most burning questions and just some hot topics. So, you know, if you guys have been here before, you're tuning in, it's episode 8 of the Weekly Fire. You know that we like to have a segment we call Hot or Not. We look at the biggest winners and losers, smoke and mirrors, where we talk about, you know, how to identify scams. And smoke and mirrors, right? And then we have Scorched Earth, where we talk about tragic tales from Bryce and Pizza Mind's life in crypto.
So many tragedies.
And then we talk about fire tweets. That's kind of self-explanatory, just best tweets from the week. Let's start off with the market weather report. Pizza Mind, what are you seeing in the market right now? You know, Bitcoin dominance, or, you know, are altcoins doing well?
We had a little bull trap earlier this week. Alts got pumped really high. Ethereum went up really big. And then Bitcoin dumped and everything else dumped down again a little bit too. So we're still in our accumulation phase. I don't care what anyone else says.
Yeah, you know, I definitely think it is too early to call alt seasons, too early to call alts are back. You know, we still have some serious averages, right? Some moving averages that we need to turn positive. Your 50-week and your 20-week moving average are still sloping downwards and price is still below them. And how do you tell if you're in a bull trend? It's, well, if price is making higher highs and higher lows and it's above some, you know, some medium to long-term moving averages. And we're just not there yet. So Crypt Nation, we're trying to keep you guys safe. We're trying to keep everybody on the right side of the market. You know, it's now is probably a good time to start looking to dollar cost average in, but it's still going to be extremely volatile as Bitcoin still consolidates and tries to, you know, come out of this consolidation pattern. Again, it could spike all the way back down to 8K, like we've been saying. Could go back all the way down at 6K. Nobody knows. The point we're trying to make is that you need to be planning your trade, right? You need to say, well, if Bitcoin starts to go below 9K again, here's what I'm going to do. Or if Bitcoin starts to break back above 12K, here's what I'm going to do. And so, yeah, so that's kind of what we're seeing here in the market. It's still a risky play, but it could be a good time to start dollar cost averaging your way into altcoins and into Bitcoin. It's going to be a good time to have exposure to both. So any last thoughts on the weather report here for the market before we kind of jump into some of the fun stuff?
When you say it's time to dollar cost average in, does that mean it looks like the bottom is in, or should we still really play it safe and be careful? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. I should definitely you know, explain a little bit more what I was saying. So do I think the altcoin bottom is in? You know, I actually kind of do think that the lowest prices for altcoins we have already seen. That being said, there's still opportunity cost, right? So not like, and what I mean by opportunity cost is that you could buy an altcoin right now, but it might stay at the same price for the next several months. And there's better ways to be deploying your capital. Whether that's in different markets, right? Like, you know, maybe stocks are going to be doing good, or maybe other markets, you know, your opportunity cost. So even though I think that probably the lowest prices for altcoins have been hit, there still could be other better buying opportunities. Maybe Bitcoin's better. But I definitely think the bottom for Bitcoin is in as well. So that's kind of what I mean there. Dollar cost averaging basically means you're not going to deploy all your capital all at once because the lowest possible price you think has been in. It just means taking a step back and saying, you know, what if I'm wrong? Because at the end of the day, you know, lower prices could very well be in order. We could be wrong and all that kind of stuff. So dollar cost averaging is a good way, an easy way to hedge. But yeah, let's move on real quick to hot or not. I kind of put together a list of some of the biggest gainers and biggest losers. Real quick, we're going to run through these. Our criteria is in the last 7 days, if you've traded at least $1 million worth of volume and you have the biggest percentage gain or loss, top three, bottom three, you're coming on the list. So we have Silverway. They traded $13 million in the last 7 days and they are up 220%. That's pretty big. We have Swipe, which traded $2 million in the last 7 days, and they're up 112%.
Oh, my God.
And then we have Ripio Credit Network, who we're very familiar with. They traded $2.5 million in the last 7 days, and they're up 88%. So if you guys were in one of those coins for the last week, you guys are feeling pretty good about your choices.
You also must have been feeling completely insane prior to that week.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But it was a really good week to be a shitcoin.
Couldn't have said it better. And on the flip side, we have some not so hot guys. We got 2BitUp token. They traded $3.2 million in the last 7 days, and they're down 36% on that volume.
Ouch.
What we have, Mindex coin, which traded $16.6 million, and they are down 25.4%. And that's big volume. For those guys. So that's definitely not a good look. It could be some big whale coming in and dumping all of his tokens, as we've seen happen all too often. And then the last one we have is Taroosh. They traded $1 million in 7 days, just barely making the cut, and they were down 17%. So
what the hell is that?
Yeah. I do not know what a Taroosh token is. But guys, if you do and you're holding it, rest in peace.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Let's, you want to do fire tweet first, or do you want to do smoke and mirrors plus scorched earth? What are you thinking, man?
Let's do the fire tweet.
Okay. Fire tweets, guys. If you guys aren't privy to what's going on in the markets right now, we have some big news. Interest rates got cut yesterday or maybe 2 days ago. That means they are devaluing the dollar. Interest rates are the price of money, and they are cheapening the dollar. They're making it easier, cheaper to borrow, is what essentially lowering the interest rates does. And so we have a great tweet from this guy named Wall Street Playboys. That's at Wall ST Playboys. And he's not commenting on the interest rate cuts. He's commenting on a different tool that the Federal Reserve has in its tool belt. And this is called the printing press. And we all know the printing press as something that can debase your savings, that can create more money arbitrarily out of thin air. Okay, guys, this is very important. He says, the Fed just printed the entire value of all cryptocurrencies this week. For context, this is 39.2% of the entire bailout from 2008 to 2009. So in 5 days, we had... So this is me talking now. In 5 days, we had 39% of the entire 2008-2009 bailout program this week. That's insane. So think about it. So we have $275 billion that were printed this week. And in the 2 years of that bailout program, it was a $700 billion stimulus package, right? We're almost, we're well over a quarter of the way there. We're almost halfway there, and it was just a couple days.
Sorry, let me get this straight. Without a congressional hearing, with no one else's permission, no vote, they just decided to print this money out of thin air.
Roger. Roger that.
Oh my God.
And again, the people that are running the Fed, you know, they are economists and they are all smart people and they are all, you know, appointed by, you know, representatives, people that are supposed to, you know, government bodies that are supposed to represent you and me and all sorts of things like that. But kind of at the end of the day, there's this arbitrary decision made to, in order to fight a recession, they are going to make your dollars cheaper. And, you know, by devaluing their dollars, they are also, you know, by proxy, devaluing their debt to other countries because the debt that they owe to other countries is denominated in dollars, right? So what happens if you owe somebody $100 billion, but then you print more of that $100 billion, you're effectively devaluing your debt. So that's when we talk about the trade wars between America and China in the race to devalue your currency. You're trying to offset your trade deficits. And that's what's going on right now through things like printing more dollars and through interest rates. So at the end of the day, you know, I hope these guys know what they're doing to fight off this recession. But I don't know, man. It's like there's got to be another way.
I don't think there is another way for the U.S. dollar because they've been digging themselves into a hole for 100 years and continuing to pass the bill on to the next generation. So we either get a new currency like Germany had to do after they couldn't pay for their debts after World War One.
Right, the hyperinflation of the Deutschmark or the Reichmark.
Yeah, or we completely default on all of our loans and we lose our A credit rating, which is probably going to happen at some point. Hmm. But it's all just smoke and mirrors. Hmm. Like the entire U.S. dollar at this point and the economy based on it is smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting kind of crazy. It's getting definitely out of hand. With all this stuff going on, but that's why there's alternative, you know, assets to invest in, essentially.
Thankfully.
You know, thank God. We're going to go into smoke and mirrors and we're going to combine smoke and mirrors with our scorched earth segment. So you're probably like, what the fuck? How is that going to happen? Well, I'll tell you, here's what's going to happen. We are going to break down our framework for identifying legitimate projects to invest in. In the crypto world, like, you know, these projects aren't necessarily pre-verified, right? So when you, for instance, go to invest in a stock or something, that goes through all these regulatory bodies. It gets listed on a public exchange. There's all sorts of regulations around it. And so you don't need to go like Google Netflix's roadmap if you want to invest in Netflix, or you don't need to Google, you know, like Reed Hastings' biography to make sure he's a legitimate character and stuff. But in the crypto world, you actually need to do these kinds of things.
Can't someone just tell us how to evaluate this stuff in an easier way?
You know, it comes down to you have to evaluate things for yourself, man. You have to do your own research in this space. And if you want to be financially free or financially beholden to nobody, you have to start taking power into your own hands.
Okay, fair enough. But is there at least like a scorecard or something that we can go off of? Some boxes to check?
Yeah, so that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. We made a little list. And so we're going to be kind of riffing off of this list that we made, but we think it's pretty comprehensive. Let's, you know, before we get into, you know, breaking down how you should be conducting your research and what you should be looking at, I'm just going to walk you through real quick some notions here. So if you ever hearing the word guarantee when you're, you know, looking at cryptocurrencies and stuff and somebody's marketing to you and they say, we guarantee something, there are no guarantees in life. And it is definitely true in crypto that there are no guarantees in crypto. All right.
Yes.
I've seen, you know, projects like whatever, BitConnect, that say we could guarantee a fixed rate of return for every, you know, Bitcoin that you send to this BitConnect wallet. And then what happens? BitConnect goes belly up. It's a Ponzi scheme. They're indicted by the SEC. Everybody's going to prison. It's nuts, right? And that was because they guaranteed something that they couldn't guarantee. If you're ever hearing a guarantee, run the other way. That's another thing to look out for. And then the last point I'm going to harp on here is forks. If you are hearing this new fork that's coming out, it's going to be the new Bitcoin. It's going to be the new Ethereum, right? The new Monero. It's a fork. It's a copy paste. They changed some source code. But at the end of the day, a lot of those are cash grabs. and they're not legitimate. So beware of forks claiming to be the real currency. All right, guys. So now that we know what to avoid, why don't we go ahead and look at how do we evaluate a potential investment?
I'll start at the beginning. Let's look at the concept and strategy of what this thing is actually trying to achieve. There's so many cool ideas out there, but you really have to stop for a second and dial it in your excitement and ask yourself, is this goal and project actually realistic, or is it just way ahead of its time? That's a really important thing to think about. Like, if we're talking about autonomous helicopters, of course I want to invest in that really early, but is that really going to come around in the next few years? Are there FAA guidelines into how something like that might work? Or is it likely that this company is going to run out of money before they ever get the permission to start selling these things?
No, that's a super good point. You got to always think about, you know, what is this project trying to achieve? You know, and what problem is it solving? And then you could even kind of dive further into that. You know, you go to their website. A website that we like to use is coinmarketcap.com. You could search the coin, and then you could pull up links to their websites and all sorts of different stuff like that. So you go to their website and you see, you know, if, for instance, I'll say whatever, IOTA, that's one coin that is out there that has very ambitious goals. You know, they want to be the medium of exchange in the backbone of IoT, you know, give IoT devices, you know, smart fridges, smart devices, smart cars, all that kind of stuff. They want to give them identity and wallets. And then you think, well, that's a really lofty ambition. And then you could kind of see like, well, what are they doing currently? And they have that, you know, some partnerships with, you know, Bosch and Jaguar, and they're actually implementing wallets into cars for proof of concepts and stuff. So even if it is an ambitious goal, go ahead and look to see if they have partnerships that are actually implementing these problems that they're claiming to solve.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in addition, you have to ask yourself, does this solution to the problem really require crypto or blockchain? Or are there companies outside this space that have already solved this problem?
Right. Yeah. Honestly, it's like, could you use a gift card network for the problem you're trying to solve and issuing a cryptocurrency for like local restaurants or whatever? or do you really need a crypto, right? Or, you know, some of these enterprises are saying, well, we want a blockchain within our company because it sounds sexy and cool. And maybe, you know, it could help our valuation. Well, at the end of the day, maybe you could just use a centralized database or like MongoDB or something like that, right?
Right.
So you really need to think about the value proposition of cryptocurrency in general. Like, it's a permissionless, censorship resistant, you know, hard cap supply, globally decentralized, all these things. Like, do you really need that at your small business? Probably not.
Right. Crypto and blockchain are just two very new, very sexy tools, but that doesn't mean they're the right tool for every job.
Couldn't have said it better. The other thing that we like to make sure that people are looking at is the existing customer or user base of these crypto projects. So, you know, Pizza Mind, what does that look like? What would a successful user base look like and an implementation here? And what would an unsuccessful one look like?
A successful implementation is where you already have an existing product or service, you already have customers, you already have a following that you can communicate your new idea to, and then simply upgrade or pivot what you're already doing.
Right.
So it's really, really crucial. If you already have an existing user base, you're going to succeed a lot faster.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And one really good example of a team who's doing this successfully is the Props Project. As an example, the Props Project is founded by the same guys who founded a platform called YouNow. Also, YouNow, Pizza Mind and I stream on YouNow every day at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. They've been around for how many years? 10 years?
2012, maybe?
2012. Okay. So they have this streaming platform. Like, before cryptocurrency was like, you know, a thing, they were just streaming these live shows, and they issued their own in-app currency that is on a crypto. But at the end of the day, they have millions of, I think they have 30 million users or registered users. And, you know, they raised money from Comcast Ventures. They raised money from Coin Fund. They raised money from Union Square Ventures, you know, Fred Wilson's team. Some of the smartest guys in the crypto space. And it basically goes to show that a platform that has existing users is very viable to have a viable cryptocurrency, right?
Absolutely.
So guys, one of the things that you need to be looking at when you're buying a crypto project. You could go to the blockchain explorers and see how, you know, how active, what's the network activity, the on-chain activity, right? How many transactions are happening?
I think that's one of the best signs of a network health.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. It's like, if you go on and see two transactions have happened in the last day, and it has a market cap of $10 million. Do you really think that that $10 million is worth it? Probably not. It's probably vapor. So let's move on to the other thing that you guys should be looking for. And basically, this is just analyzing what stage of development the project is in. And that basically means it's like, hey, is this like a brand new thought that is just a white paper and in a project deck with the ideas of what we're going to do? Or is it already developed and now we're raising money? There's just different stages of development.
And that also depends on your own appetite for risk. The earlier you get into something, the higher it's going to pay off. But the earlier you also get in, the likelihood that you lose your money as well.
Right.
There's so many more things that could go wrong. I think 7 out of 10 startups are out of business within their first year.
Oh, that's pretty crazy. I didn't know that one. Yeah. But that makes sense.
And that's not just blockchain and crypto. That's in general.
Yeah. I mean, guys, you need to be thinking also, this is probably a good time to, you know, bring in this idea of you guys need to have your own time horizon for your investments, right? You know,
yes.
You know, take crypto away from everything, pretend crypto didn't exist, you know, pretend you were just, you know, only looking to buy bonds and stocks and commodities and stuff like that. It doesn't matter what you're investing in. You need to have a plan. You need to know what your goals are that you're trying to meet, right? Maybe you're trying to pay off some student loans. Okay, well, what's the plan for that? You need to put up a spreadsheet, put in your income, put in your principal investment, and then put in your interest rates, and then look for when that interest rate adjusts, right? People got these really low variable interest rates in, you know, during the subprime bubble, where they're like, oh, well, it's just a low variable interest rate. What does that mean? Well, the variable interest rate means that once you, you know, once this expires next year, you're going to go from 10% APR to 55% APR. And they just didn't think like that. And then you're never going to be able to even pay off your interest rates, let alone your principal, let alone the entire fucking loan, right? So you guys need to have a plan. Maybe it's, oh, I want to save up enough money in order to buy that house. Okay, well, put up what do you need to buy the house? Maybe it's $1 million home and you need to get 20% down, and then you need to get this X, Y, and Z in order to secure your mortgage. And there's so many things you guys need to think with. So it's a good time now to be thinking about what is your time horizon for your investments. So back to Pizza Mind's original point of what stage is the project in? You know, if you're looking to hold a project for 10 years because you believe in it, fine. It doesn't matter if it's an early stage project because you're willing to accept the risk. But if you're looking to, swing trade it, you know, within buy it now and sell it a month later or a week later, if it's a brand spanking new project and there's not much liquidity, even though it's the coolest idea in the world, it's probably not going to be your best option. But that's just my opinion. This isn't financial advice. It's not investment advice. It's just a place where we could all come together, educate ourselves, learn about what's going on, and kind of just talk shop.
And lastly, just to follow up on that point, it's good to know, does the project have a detailed and realistic roadmap? Do they project that they're going to need 4 to 6 to 10 years out to really have their ecosystem up and running? And then do you have the appetite to wait for that? If someone has this amazing, cool, brand new technology idea and their roadmap is only 1 to 2 years long, have they even really fully thought out what they're doing?
Yeah, it's like the roadmap is 2 years long and you're like, wait, guys, what happens after we get there? And it's like, oh, well, we hit a dead end. We don't know what's going on.
We don't know. Now, it's very often that roadmaps are not that long, but what that means is you also have to allow the company room to pivot. They need to go in one direction and figure out if it's working or not. And especially in the very, very early stages, they're going to go in a bunch of different directions until they find the best one.
100%. And guys, for those of you who haven't heard the term roadmap, perhaps, basically this is just a company's public-facing plan for the development of the company. Okay, Q1 2020, January. Here's what we're going to accomplish. We're going to have a new wallet built out. Here's where you could find the open source code. Here's the how-to guide, and here's where it's going to be released, and here's where you can download it. Okay, fine. February, Q1, 2020, we're going to have this new API that you could jack into to start to scrape data from this part of our network. Here's where you can download it. Here's this, here's that. So, you know, maybe Q3, we're going to hire two new developers and a business developer. Here's the job description for this developer. Here's what he's going to be working on. Here's where we're using the money that we raised from you guys and raised from the market. Here's where we're going to be implementing that. So that's the kind of stuff that we're talking about when we say a roadmap. Let's move on to some of the other things that we should talk about. Beyond just analyzing and critically thinking about the problems that these companies are solving and the concepts and strategies, Pete's like, what else do you look for in a good project?
Well, a lot of investors don't even really care what the project is. They care more about who the team is, and they like to invest in people rather than projects.
Okay, that's a great point.
If you want to look at it from that perspective, first you look at the core team and the executive team. Do they have relevant experience in the blockchain industry? And what is their experience in the role that they're in? And what that means is there's a lot of bright-eyed, bushy-tailed people entering this space that have no fucking clue how it actually works. They just think adding a blockchain to it is fine, or this industry functions like any other tech industry, and it doesn't. There's a lot of different nuances. The market is completely different. And also, what is their experience in the role that they have now?
But I think what's even more important than if they have experience in the blockchain or crypto industry per se is what vertical are they coming from, right? Mm-hmm. So a vertical, if you guys haven't heard of the term vertical, it basically is like an industry, right? So we have the automobile vertical, we have the entertainment vertical, we have the finance vertical, right? Okay, so cool. You have a crypto project that is claiming to be the next big thing in autonomous driving. So you would expect that you are going to have a CEO and a core management team that comes from, you know, the digital arm of Ford or GE, or they come from transportation worlds like that, and they've already had CEO positions. You shouldn't be seeing some rando who's has 5 years of experience working at a marketing firm running this thing, right? Look at the core team member and say, do they have relevant and acclaimed vertical experience for this project that they're claiming is going to change the world, that they're asking for your money or saying that you could buy their tokens, all that kind of stuff. So guys, make sure you're doing your diligence on the team. What else should we get into in regards to the team? There's got to be some other interesting stuff here.
Yeah, I think that who your advisors are and what their experience plays a big role as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because let's face it, if you don't, I mean, not every single CEO or chief marketing officer is going to be perfect and this is what they've done their whole life. Like they can't. This is a brand new space for the most part. So you're going to have some things that seem like a good fit, but maybe not perfect. But what can compensate for that is having a good team of advisors, people that have been there before, that can fill in the blanks.
Yeah. And so guys, advisors in the cryptocurrency world, in the blockchain project world, for instance, you'll have an advisor to help you get on exchanges. So they're kind of the glue between your project and an exchange, or they'll help you try and make introductions to, if you're, again, going back to that autonomous vehicle wallet idea that we just kind of threw out there, they'd be, you know, your guy to help you get introductions to different partners and stuff like that. But another important thing about advisors and the importance of, you know, also these core team members is if they're not public figures or they're not, you're basically staking your reputation on this project, the success or the failure of the project. So you want to, you know, buy a coin that has reputation staked on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you guys definitely need to be looking to say, all right, who is staking their reputation on this project? And is that reputation valuable? And is that reputation, you know, worth betting on, essentially?
So yeah, definitely.
So that's another one. And that brings us to our next point here is, you know, what firms are involved with the project? Why is that important?
Usually before even talking to individual investors, they'll usually go to a venture capital firm to get some seed money. Venture capital firms are going to do their own due diligence, and they're going to look at this with a lot of scrutiny, and they're going to ask a lot of questions. So getting a yes from a venture capital firm could be a little bit of a confidence booster. Now, venture capital has a ton of money to lose as well.
True.
And they understand that not all of their investments are going to pay off. So they might be okay with losing $1 million because, you know, they're going to gain $100 million from somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And like how we kind of touched on earlier is, you know, in the stock market world, these investments are more or less pre-qualified in the sense that, you know, these are companies that have been around for a long time. They've raised a lot of money from a lot of different sophisticated investors. And once they hit the public market, they are more or less, qualified investments. Okay. In the world of crypto, none of these things are qualified investments and you all have to be doing your own diligence. But to Pizza Mind's point of, if you see that they're advertising that they have investments from, you know, some reputable venture capital firms, again, you're gonna have to do your diligence on the success of those venture capital firms that they're advertising they're part of. But you could say, okay, well, if it's good enough for them, then it might be good enough for me. That's probably not the best mindset, but it's another, you know, checkbox. What other smart money has been inside of this project? You could see these names attached to it, and they're saying, oh, well, they're staking their reputation and their money on this coin. It's at least not a fucking outright scam. And that's about all you can get from that is like, at least it's not an outright scam. It might not, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it might not appreciate in value, or it might have been a bad investment on their part, but you could take their diligence as a little bit of your own diligence.
Right. Take exactly.
That with a grain of salt.
Yeah. So at least the team is going to give it an honest effort.
Exactly.
And that honest effort then plays into our next series of topics, the competitive environment, because a lot of these things, they're not going to be unique. And if they are, they're not going to be unique for very long. So they're going to be competing against other people trying to do the same thing. So are they trying to reinvent the wheel? Are they trying to just focus on a scaling solution for blockchain, which already has another 100 competitors with no users on it? What are they really doing? So what does the competitive environment look like?
Right. Yeah. What market are they operating in? What's the growth potential of said market? I think those are all great points to be always thinking with. You know, one thing I want to kind of touch on real quick on the team side, guys, I've actually literally seen this happen where somebody will post or, you know, throw up a cryptocurrency, print it out real quick, and advertise and all this stuff. And you'll go to the site and it'll have a list of names and, you know, LinkedIn's and Twitter's, and it looks real nice. But then you'll click, on the characters or whatever, and it'll go to their Twitter, and the Twitter handle has at the pinned post right at the top, I am not in any way involved with this project at this website. This is an outright scam. They stole my picture. All of it's fake. And so this literally happens where people throw up, my advisor is this one really reputable guy, all that stuff. And then you go, you look at their LinkedIn and they have no involvement with it whatsoever. So before you just take it at face value on the site, you should double and triple check just through some quick Google searches and LinkedIn searches and stuff that's actually a consensual post on their website.
And if you're going to be investing a lot of money, send them a message just to confirm in person.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. No, that's perfect. You should definitely be, you know, reaching out to these companies and stuff and saying, hey, like, could we hop on a quick call? I'd love to just learn about your project and or whatever. I think a lot of people are receptive to that. So I think that kind of does it for, you know, I think we'll touch on this probably again next week with some more, because guys, we have a really, really, really long list of other things, but we don't want to spend it all here in one episode because we've got to still talk about the news and we don't want to keep you guys all morning. Table this discussion for next week. So if you enjoyed this, we're going to give you some more, you know, thought processes or a framework for your thought processes next week. So Pete, why don't we quickly jump on over to the news for the week?
Absolutely. What's going on?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of big things that have happened, and I kind of want to start with Bitcoin's hash rate hitting an all-time high yet again. Seems like every 2 weeks, when you know Bitcoin's difficulty adjusts every 2 weeks based on the amount of hash rate on the network. The more hash rate that is pointed at the Bitcoin network, the more difficult it is to mine those blocks. So Pete, what are the implications of Bitcoin's hash rate hitting 102
trillion
terahashes per second.
Oh my God. That means that Bitcoin is in higher demand than ever. So pay no attention to the prices, pay no attention to the volume. People that are into Bitcoin mining are clamoring and doing all they can. So what that also means is there's a ton of brand new machines that are online. And we just reported earlier in the week that over 600,000 new ASIC miners had come online mining Bitcoin.
Yeah, so that happened in the last 2 months. 600,000 new miners came online. Basically, guys, here's what this means for the space, is that people are investing right now in illiquid assets, right? Like hardware, in order to support the liquid asset that is Bitcoin. So this is how entire movements are built. And whether it's the the tech bubble or the oil bubbles or the railroad back in the day, all these different things, it's like you need this illiquid hardware investment before you could actually get price appreciation in what that hardware is supporting. I hope that made sense, and I'll repeat myself a little bit here. So basically, we're seeing an influx of capital into infrastructure that supports Bitcoin and supports other cryptocurrencies. So why is that important? Why is that relevant to you guys, right? Well, if you're a Bitcoin holder, it's because people are pouring money into this space quicker than they can freaking handle. And it is an exponential growth rate. This is an adoption curve. This is so much bigger than you could ever really imagine. And it just means the network's more secure than ever as well. So that's another good thing that we can take away from this news bit. But this just happened today. The other thing, we have two other little topics that we want to talk about real quick before we let you guys go. Wells Fargo coin. Who would have thought?
Oh, I'm not surprised one bit. These banks will do anything for a cheap money grab. I hope no one ever uses it.
I hope nobody ever touches that poison.
But it is a validation that Bitcoin and cryptocurrency is the technology upgrade to money that we keep telling you it is.
It just further validates our thesis here at Crypto 101 and everybody who is holding cryptocurrencies is that, well, JP Morgan issued their JP Morgan coin early this year, maybe late last year. Goldman Sachs owns Circle, which owns Poloniex, and Circle and Poloniex are two massive crypto companies. People are making, smart money's coming in, all that kind of stuff. But Wells Fargo coin is, that's obviously a colloquial term. It's not what they're calling it, but that's what people on the street are calling it. They're calling it, just this blockchain-based token that can hold a stable value that we could use to instantly settle our debts in between our different branches of the Wells Fargo Bank. And so that's pretty interesting. I mean, they're realizing finally the potential of a blockchain ledger. Good for them. But at the end of the day, I think it was one of the first fire tweets of the week that we had, like maybe episode one or two, where we talked about when the social media intern at Wells Fargo tweeted out that, hey, I'm sorry that you're not able to make a withdrawal at this time. Wells Fargo does not accept anybody that deals with cryptocurrency. And then he signed it his name, like Josh or something. And it got like 7,000 retweets and a bunch of likes. And, I just imagine, picture this kid waking up the next morning and be like, oh God, what have I done? I just stated a company policy and it just blew up. So, oh, how the tables have turned.
What a bunch of hypocrites. Fuck Wells Fargo.
You heard it here first.
And JP Morgan. And Bank of America.
Fuck them all. Yeah. I love that Bank of America calls themselves Bank of America and like First National Bank, or we have, U.S. Bank. I mean, these aren't the banks of America. These aren't the First National Bank of America. No, these are banks that are making money off of people in America choosing to use them. It's just, it blows my mind that they have, like, you look at the columns of the banks, right? The columns by, I mean, like the actual architecture of the banks. And they're so monolithic and so assertive and authoritarian and, Greco-Roman. They have these big columns and these skyscrapers and all these things trying to say that, we are here. We are right. We are the one. And it's like, dude, people need to start to wake up to the idea that there's other ways to store your money, better ways. And which brings us to our last news bit. Somebody who is waking up to cryptocurrency is the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. We all know them as the CME.
They're kind of a big deal, huh?
Yeah, they are actually the largest. They trade the most money out of any exchange in the world. That's probably the easiest way to say it. Biggest exchange. They listed Bitcoin futures on December 17th or 18th in 2017, which actually marked the exact top of the price of Bitcoin, right? Because now you had a paper-settled futures contract that you can use to essentially lock in crypto profits or Bitcoin profits, I should say. You could use that. You could start selling futures and all sorts of stuff like that to lock in all the profits that you made on a regulated exchange. But here's the news bit. We have now the CME announcing today that Bitcoin options are now going to be available. This is enormous, enormous, enormous. And why is this enormous? It's because it gives regulated funds, the big money, the institutional capital, new ways to position themselves, new ways to hedge. It'll basically grease the wheels for capital to flow in and out of cryptocurrency markets. So Bitcoin options coming on the CME, Q1 2020, you heard it here first. This is big. People will be able to buy puts, sell puts, buy calls, sell calls, trade all sorts of different options. You should go, just look this one up because this one's a really big one.
Wow.
But kind of That's at the crazy. End of the day, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the news here is bullish. We have Bakkt launching their physically settled Bitcoin futures. Bakkt is owned by ICE, ICE Intercontinental Exchange. They own the New York Stock Exchange. So you can see the kind of players that are getting into Bitcoin, right? So Bakkt is launching in a couple days. So that'll be fun to watch. And yeah, guys, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We're going to dive right back into a bunch of shit. Same place, same time next week. And yeah, we got some good episodes coming out for you on Monday and Thursday. So stay tuned to that. If you guys haven't joined our Facebook group yet, you guys got to get in there. You got to get deeper into Crypt Nation, guys. Just go to Facebook, type in Crypto 101. We're going to be the first thing that pops up. There's several thousand people in there. We talk all day, every day about the markets, price trends, news bits. We just have general conversations. It's a really fun place to interact. So if you want to learn more and just dive deeper and get more involved, highly want to recommend coming on over there. Follow us on Twitter. That's at Crypto101Pod. Me, Pizza Mind, and Kevin are just always posting stuff over there. And then lastly, I already mentioned it, but I'll mention it again. Come join our YouNow stream. I mean, we're there Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Me and Pizza Mind live stream for about an hour, hour and a half every weekday. And we just talk about different terms. We break things down. We have interactive questions. It's like this live streaming channel where there's people in the comment section asking questions. People could actually guest on the show. There's a lot of crazy stuff. So guys, there's a lot going on here in Crypt Nation. Things are just heating up, man. It's been good.
It's been great. And I can't wait to see what happens when the market turns around. It's going to be nuts.
Yep, 100%, man. All right, well, safe travels back home to San Diego. Are you going to be back a couple days, or when are you back?
Yeah, I'll be back Sunday.
All right, cool. What time?
Early in the morning.
Okay, sweet. All right, I will see you on Sunday. And Crypt Nation, you guys take care of yourselves, all right? Have a good weekend. Bye.